From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know by now, the United States Supreme Court could soon end the constitutional right to abortion. A draft opinion was recently published by Politico suggesting a majority of justices might be ready to overturn the 50-year precedent known as Roe v. Wade. Here on the show, we've been having a series of conversations about what this would mean for Illinois. Recently, we've spoken with people who help women come to Illinois to seek abortions, and last week we heard from women who are part of a pre-Roe underground abortion service in Illinois. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, they were known as Jane. Today, we want to hear from people on the other side of this issue. And joining us now is Renee Mullen, a Central Illinois advocate and volunteer with the group 40 Days for Life. Renee, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you very much for providing this opportunity to share some information that I hope will be valuable and helpful to your listeners.
Sure. And I also want to introduce Julie Olson from Champaign. Julie, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And as ever, we invite our listeners to join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, Renee, I wanted to begin just by asking you to take me back to the moment when you first heard this news story about this draft opinion from the Supreme Court. Where were you? What were you doing?
I'm not sure exactly where I was, to be honest. I think I first heard about it probably through a news link or something that was shared via some electronic means. So I think I probably first heard about it just sitting at my computer. And certainly I was hopeful and optimistic about this news. I mean, those of us who volunteer and who work with regard to pro-life endeavors have been hoping for this for decades. And I can't claim to have been involved to that extent for decades, but certainly many people have. If I can, Brian, I just want to make one minor qualification to something you said. You referred to this as a constitutional right. And I know that, this conversation is not to debate legal terminology, but I just would like to point out, please, that abortion is certainly not mentioned in the Constitution. So I think there's a lot of relevant facts to this discussion. And Justice Harry Blackmun, who made that majority opinion in Roe versus Wade, he himself said that the Constitution does not explicitly mention the right to privacy. He simply interpreted the word liberty in the Constitution and privacy. So I think the language we use is important and relevant too.
I hear what you're saying, Renee, and I hope this conversation, I'm interested just to hear your story, your sort of origin story. And, that's where I asked you, where I was interested where you were when you heard the news. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like Roe is about to be overturned? What is the sense that you have among yourself and people you talk with in the movement?
Yes, I think that is certainly the hope. And I think certainly, everything that has been shared in recent months, certainly even prior to this leak, and the leak certainly shouldn't have happened, prior to this leak, from both those who are on the pro-choice, pro-abortion side and those who are on the pro-life side, that consensus has been that it's very likely that it will be overturned and then this issue will return to the states.
Yeah.
Julie, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Sort of same setup question. Where were you when you first heard about this opinion? Do you remember what you were doing?
I think I might have heard it on the radio. I'm not really sure. And I was kind of surprised. Can you hear me?
Yep. It's great.
I was kind of surprised because it was a leak, which was something I'd never heard in the court system before. So that was concerning. And I wondered what was, who was behind this. To my knowledge, we still don't know. It doesn't really matter. I think that it was very clear to me after hearing more about what he actually said that it wasn't going to be, no more abortions in the land. It was just going to go to the states, which is what I think the states would prefer from what I can gather.
I wonder, how do you envision a post-Roe world, Julie? What do you think that would look like?
Well, I was in a pre-Roe world, I guess. So I believe that we already have several states who have very liberal laws, including New York up to the 9th month. I don't see that changing. I see that each state taking on their own people to determine what suits best for them. I believe here in Illinois, we'll have pretty liberal abortion laws. And in California, I'm not sure other places. I've seen that some states are already making moves not to have any or under 12 weeks and things like that. I think it's just going to be a state-to-state thing. It'll be interesting.
Sure, sure. So, Renee, I'm curious, how did you first get started in this work, in this advocacy work?
Sure. So I got involved for a number of reasons. I can't really tell you like specifically when. I mean, my faith is certainly important to me, and that's a part of it. But I know that a lot of people, when we talk about abortion, they may like to say that those of us who are pro-life are pushing our religion on others. So when I talk about abortion, I often prefer to take religion out of the conversation and focus on other factors, science, history, law, helping others, certainly. So I would say I got involved quite a number of years ago, on an occasional basis, I guess, where I would get involved with international peaceful prayer collaborations like 40 Days for Life and go out and pray outside abortion clinics and have resources and information available to offer to people that might be interested in having a conversation and in learning and hopefully becoming better informed about, you know, really important details pertaining to pregnancy and prenatal development and what constitutes a human being. So I was involved, I would say, more occasionally and then more, you know, helping with like specific pro-life activities and events. And then over the years, I just gradually got more and more involved. But I come to it from three different perspectives, and I think that's relevant to share. So, and they're not necessarily in any particular order, but one is that I struggled myself in terms of getting pregnant with my husband. We had three miscarriages, and that was very, very difficult to go through over a period of time. I'm not saying that miscarriage is the same as abortion, because it's not, but they both are the loss of a child. And that can be devastating for certainly the parents and anyone involved. So that's one factor. I am very, very blessed and fortunate to have two daughters, both of whom are adopted. And so I've experienced what it's like to be part of that adoption process. And one of my daughters was adopted through what's called domestic or open adoption. So her birth mother was a teenager at the time she got pregnant and never wavered in her decision to place her child for adoption. And we were very, very fortunate. And so we've been through domestic adoption. My other daughter is, we were fortunate to bring her into our family through international adoption. And she was in an orphanage in another country for just under 2 years before we were fortunate to bring her home. So I'm very conscious of the fact that abortion, in my opinion, is a very arbitrary decision on who deserves the right to live. And both my children are very good examples of that, and that either of their birth mothers, and I know when we talk about abortion, we often talk about birth mothers as opposed to birth fathers, but clearly there's a mother and a father involved here, a biological mother and a biological father. But I'm very conscious of the fact that either instance of my children's lives, their lives could have been terminated at the very beginning of their lives. Now, I clearly recognize that my children are human beings. I think pretty much everybody else can recognize that they're human beings. So then one of the underlying issues that I think is really important to this conversation is what constitutes a human being? When does a human being's life have value? And when does a human being deserve the right to life? And I think with the issue of abortion, we've gotten away from a lot of those really important questions and finding that common ground. The third factor that I think is relevant in terms of my pro-life volunteering involvement is, again, I said my faith is very important to me, and I consider myself very blessed and fortunate to have been raised in a family with faith. However, I found it as an adult that my ancestry is actually Jewish on my mother's side. And that's a long story, of course, but I know that some of my ancestors were deemed to not be human beings during the Holocaust. And I have visited the concentration camps where they died. So it's very personal to me for a lot of reasons, this issue of being pro-life as opposed to being pro-choice or pro-abortion.
Well, thank you so much for sharing those personal aspects of your own reproductive health journey and the adoption of your children. I appreciate that. It's obviously a very deeply personal issue for you. And you raise that question, right? When is it a life? And that is at the crux philosophically of this debate. Julie, I want to turn to you now. I understand that you yourself had an abortion. Can you talk about that experience?
Yes, I can. I was about 17. It was here locally. I got myself in a situation that was not good, wasn't a healthy situation. It's kind of a secretive situation too. So abortion was legal at that point in time. It had been there for 2 or 3 years or so. And I didn't know what to do, but I knew that this wasn't going to happen. I went around to people that I was involved with to try. It cost money, obviously, to get this. Didn't have any. I was a teenager. My parents were divorced, and my mom was a single mom with us three girls at home. I was also getting violently sick because I was pregnant, and my mother finally noticed, and I told her, and much to my shame, and she was a strong Christian woman, and it broke her heart. But I was insistent that I had to do this. And so with her help, I went and had an abortion. And it was the most devastating experience I've ever had in my life. And of course, it was very shameful. So you didn't discuss it with people. Unfortunately, there were several other young women in the room when it happened. So unfortunately, other people were there, and I recognized more than one. And that was also extremely shameful to have to be in a room with other women. And I remember after I had the abortion, it was under 12 weeks, that I asked the nurse if it was a boy or a girl. And she laughed at me because, of course, there was no way to know, because abortion is very graphic. And there's no way to see the sex of the baby. Anyway, I went on with my life, got married, just kind of, started going through life. And then I came involved with a church and realized that I needed the Lord in my life. And so I accepted the Lord as my Savior. But I had this big, big doubt in my mind that I had killed a baby and that there was no forgiveness for me. I finally got up the nerve to tell my husband, who had nothing to do with the original. And he told me, if God can forgive you, how can I not forgive you? And that was my first release. I'm being set free. And then secondly, I went to my pastor's wife and we talked and we started learning scripture. And through a lot of love and prayer, I was able to forgive myself. And I believe my baby forgives me too. And from then on, I started getting involved in the Crisis Pregnancy Center very lightly, just helping out with the clothing room and stuff. And it felt good to be able to help people. I liked their program where they, they did the test and they talked to them about it and what pregnancy might look like. And, that abortion was definitely an option, but there were other options and life was always the best way to go. And from then on, as I got a little older in my journey, I found out that post-abortion was very, very real, very hurt women. That didn't know what to do. Some of them may never have children again because of that abortion. There was a ministry there. And I started in that, and I got to walk through even more of my own healing, but help other women to heal. And that is why I am in the pro-life movement. I'm somebody who did it. I realized how wrong it is, and I hope and pray that no one else has to do it.
We need to take a break in about a minute here, but it sounds like it was an important aspect of what brought you to your faith, or at least strengthened your faith.
Yes, it was.
All right, let me just take a moment to reintroduce my guests and our conversation. We are speaking with Julie Olson from Champaign, who is an opponent of abortion. Also, Renee Mullen, a Central Illinois advocate and volunteer with the group 40 Days for Life. We are continuing our series of conversations following a report about few weeks, about a month ago now, that the U.S. Supreme Court could soon overturn the precedent Roe versus Wade, effectively letting states make their own laws about abortions. We've had conversations on this show about what that would mean for Illinois from the perspective of people who want abortion to be legal. Today we're hearing from the other side of the issue. You can join us at 800-222-9455 if you have a comment or question for our guests, 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the possibility that the United States Supreme Court could overturn Roe versus Wade, sending the abortion issue back to a state-by-state basis. Illinois is a place where abortion is legal. It's viewed by those who support abortion rights as a haven, and it has already seen an increase in the number of people coming here as other states around Illinois have restricted abortion access. There have been an increase in women coming here seeking that abortion care. We're going to talk about that in a little bit later. But I should mention we're speaking with Renee Mullen, who's a volunteer with 40 Days for Life, and Julie Olson, who's also opposed to abortion. Renee, let me ask you, what would the end of Roe mean for people like yourself, for the anti-abortion movement in general?
Okay, so for those who are involved in pro-life work and pro-life volunteering, it would just mean ongoing work and ongoing volunteering of what's already taking place. So, you know, there are many wonderful pregnancy centers in our area and all over the country and beyond that provide help and resources for pregnant mothers and fathers, and emotional support and information so that people can make informed decisions. So I'm very fortunate to volunteer at one of those pregnancy centers. And so in our state, and certainly in a number of other states across the country, that work will just continue. It's likely that the need for that help will increase. But I just want to touch on something that Julie said.
Let's stay with the pregnancy centers idea for a moment, because I understand that there are groups even from other parts of the country that are working to open more of these, you know, again, what you call pregnancy centers here in Illinois. What, talk a little bit more about what that type of place offers.
Sure. So, and, you know, I'm a big believer in sharing information and resources, and those of us who are involved in pro-life work do it because we genuinely want to help. So for your listeners, I would just encourage them to consider looking at Heartbeat International. It's a nationwide pregnancy organization where they can find help anywhere in the country and find free help. The pregnancy centers do not charge for any of their services, which is one of the differences as opposed to the abortion industry, which is certainly a financial industry. But in terms of the help that's available from pregnancy centers, there generally are what's considered to be medical or non-medical facilities. And so the medical facilities generally can provide ultrasounds. That's a medical component where mothers and fathers can see images of their preborn baby on an ultrasound, just like, you know, any mother and father can see normally when they find out that they're pregnant. And they're going to have a baby boy or baby girl. So that's part of the information that I think women as well as men really deserve, so that they can they can understand prenatal development and they can make informed decisions. And the pregnancy centers are of course honest and law abiding, and they're generally focused on providing compassion and love and help and support. So the pregnancy centers are, as I said, free and open to all. It doesn't matter what anyone's religious beliefs are. There's certainly no discrimination of any sort. And the information that's generally provided by those centers are the options that people have, which are choosing to parent, choosing to allow that baby boy or baby girl to be born, choosing to place that their child for adoption, or choosing to have an abortion. Now, that, as far as I'm aware, is certainly very different from the sort of information people will get from an abortion clinic. So I would encourage anyone who is pregnant, facing an unplanned pregnancy, to just look online and find your local pregnancy center and go in and gather some information and ask questions. And you'll find that there are people who are genuinely interested in helping you and that they will help you far beyond the birth of the baby. So there are some people that like to say that people are pro-birth rather than pro-life. I certainly don't know anyone who's pro-birth as opposed to pro-life, but the pregnancy centers will help, you know, long after the baby is born. And I know many, many people that help single mothers. There are wonderful programs to help single mothers as well, and all sorts of help beyond the birth of the pregnancy. But in terms of the pregnancy center, so in addition to the ultrasounds, of course, they can provide pregnancy tests. They provide mentoring programs, they provide parenting programs. So a lot of this is, volunteer based individuals that help, and they will help people to learn about child safety and nutrition and budgeting and basic sure. life skills that are really important to be a parent. And then there's also, of course, diapers and formula and maternity clothes and baby and toddler clothes and Christmas presents and, you know, those sorts of things. So there are a lot of free services that are available for people in need.
Julie, I understand I think you mentioned earlier that you worked at a crisis pregnancy center. Or volunteered there. What did you glean from your experiences there? I wonder if it changed the way you thought about this issue. Julie, are you with us? Julie, I think you might be muted on our Zoom connection there.
Can you hear me?
I can now. Yes.
Okay. It was a long time ago. Basically, I kind of sat out in the waiting room and helped people. We had a clothing area, and what I saw was that a lot of these were young women, and sometimes they came in with their boyfriends. Were scared. They didn't know what to expect. To be honest with you, I think many of them didn't want to have an abortion. I don't know that any of them did. I don't know what happened after they left our building, but I felt like these people were looking for something, a reason to hope. And, I would just sit and chit chat with them until a counselor would come. And sometimes I would help in the clothing room because people who were going through with their pregnancy would come in and get maternity clothes and baby clothes and furniture and all that kind of stuff. I felt like they were more hopeful being able to go there. That option wasn't available for me because it was so early in the Roe v. Wade decision. So they didn't even have that kind of stuff out in the 70s, I don't think.
You know, I want to read a text we got from a listener and invite other people if you want to join our conversation. The number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We're speaking with Julie Olson and Renee Mullen. Renee is a volunteer with the group 40 Days for Life. They're both opposed to abortion. And we got a text from somebody on the other side of the issue who said, this is Jim in Springfield, who said, if you view abortion with a Christian mindset, you are imposing your beliefs and your own choices onto the people you are trying to take choice away from. You are literally creating the argument for pro-choice. God is not an argument for someone who doesn't believe in God. And Renee, you touched on that a little earlier about, you know, your faith, and that's something you sometimes downplay when you are talking to people about this issue.
Sure. So, yeah, thank you. I'd love to address that comment. So that's precisely why I take religion out of the conversation. So, I think it's important, again, to get back to the basics. So like I said, what constitutes a human being? So if we take religion out of the conversation and we look at it from a scientific perspective, we've got the fields of biology, and biology determines that life begins at conception. We've got the fields of genetics, and genetics tells us that our DNA is present at conception. And our DNA determines, you know, all sorts of immutable traits about each individual, our hair color, our eye color, our skin color, our gender, you know, that is all present at conception. Now, that has nothing to do with religion. That's science. So I would ask this gentleman who sent this text, Jim, I think you said his name is, you know, does he believe that the fields of biology and genetics are valid? And if the fields of biology and genetics are valid, then is it not clear that a human being is a human being from the very beginning of his or her life's journey? And the earliest part of our life's journey just happens to be during our prenatal development. I think he said something about, did he say something in that text about the body or the woman's body? I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch all of the...
I don't think so. I think it was just an idea that it seems like, I think from Jim's perspective, that this argument is often motivated by religion. And I mean, I understand the points you're saying. You know, we have had and will have, you know, had discussions in the past with other people who have very different perspectives on, you know, where you define the beginning of life. Renee, I wonder Julie, I wonder if you want to jump in on this, because it sounds like we were talking about earlier, this was an important element of your faith journey, and it seems like that's an important aspect of this for you.
A very important for me. That's all I have, is my experience and what the Lord did for me in bringing healing and wholeness. And so that's where I come from. Yes, the science is proving more and more every day that babies, you can see them on the screen. It takes some of the mystery out of pregnancy. But for me, it's my faith and the Lord Jesus that told me I was forgiven and set free. And my goal is to offer that to anybody that asks for it or needs it. I'm not hitting anybody. I'm not knocking on doors and not asking people to do it. But when I see an opportunity and I feel like I should say something, I will. I've been there. I've done that. And I'm hoping that no one else will do that. I hope they choose life, but not everybody does. And that's okay. I can still love them even if they don't.
So Renee, I'm curious about, you work in Illinois, right? Which has already seen a rise in people coming from neighboring states throughout the Midwest. That's expected to increase even more if Roe is overturned. What is it like doing anti-abortion work in a state where the majority of public officials and their voters, I mean, let's be candid about that, are very much on the other side of this issue? What is that like just emotionally for you?
Sure. It's to some extent an uphill battle at the present time. But again, you know, people have been involved in pro-life work and pro-life volunteering for decades, and certainly beyond, prior to Roe versus Wade. You know, in some states, is it potentially easier? I don't know, because I haven't been involved in pro-life work in other states where maybe the laws are different than in Illinois. But again, I think, you know, those of us who are involved, and I'm very fortunate to be able to devote some time and energy to this, we are generally interested in helping others. And Julie talked about what it was like to have an abortion herself and the devastating impact that's had on her. And the abortion industry itself estimates that 1 in 4 women has had an abortion. Those are massive numbers for our country. So these are women who are struggling, who are grieving, who really need our help. And so those of us who are fortunate to be involved, we approach it from the perspective of generally wanting to help others. There's plenty of research, again, showing that women who've had an abortion have increased incidences of depression and anxiety, addiction for alcohol and drugs. Certainly, they struggle with grief, emotional issues. There's even some research showing potential increased breast cancer risk. And Julie mentioned that certainly some women do have complications subsequently if they wish to get pregnant again and have another child. In some instances, they're not able to do so. In other instances, there's a much greater likelihood of preterm birth. So this effect, you know, in addition to the babies whose lives are terminated, 60 million of them, you know, since 1973, there are women who are struggling and suffering enormously. And this goes on, you know, decades beyond the abortion. So again, for myself and for others who are involved, what we really are trying to do is to share information, resources for help. And as Julie mentioned, I think there are wonderful post-abortion recovery programs in our area in central Illinois and all over the country and all over the world. And I would encourage anyone who's listening, who's been involved in an abortion, you know, whether it's the mother or the father who made that decision, whether it's grandparents who sometimes may have pressured someone to get an abortion, whether it's people, you know, working in the abortion industry, I would just encourage them to seek help. There are really wonderful post-abortion recovery programs. There are literally thousands of them that take place all over the world on every continent. And they take place in our immediate area and they are open to everyone. Some of them are even available in different languages and they take place throughout the year. And of course, they're confidential.
Renee, but we're almost out of time. What do you think about the idea of the exceptions? This used to be fairly well accepted, even among people who opposed legal abortion. They would say, well, you can have the exception for rape or incest or the health of the mother. What do you think about that?
Sure. And that's a question that often is posed because, of course, people do like to point to the exceptions. So first, I just want to say rape is a horrific crime. Incest is a horrific crime. Anyone who commits rape or incest deserves to be penalized to the full extent of the law. And the individuals who are the victims deserve our help and our support. So unfortunately, what happens with abortion is, you know, someone who's maybe a victim of rape or a victim of domestic violence, if their sole solution is to get an abortion and they're not getting genuine help beyond that, we haven't helped them at all. They're still in that horrible situation. They haven't gotten the help that they generally need. So I think, it's a big issue. There's a lot that goes behind that. But, I would ask people to really think about this on an individual level. So there are faces and there are human beings behind these exceptions. So when you mention rape, which again, it's a horrific crime, and a lot of people like to point to that as the exception that should be allowed. But I think we again have to return to the core issue of what constitutes a human being, when does their life have value, when do they deserve the right to live? So Brian, have you heard of someone named Ryan Baumberger?
I haven't, but you know what? I'm afraid we are almost out of time, and I do want to give Julie a chance just to weigh in one last time before we have to go to our break here. Julie, closing thoughts about being in Illinois, as it is a state that is described as a haven for abortion access, reproductive health access.
Well, I wish that weren't so, but we are there for people who need us. I pray that more people will become aware of the services available and they will understand that they have another option. And life is always the best option. That's all I can say. Thank you for having me.
Julie Olson and Renee Mullen, I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the 21st show today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank
listeners,
you.
And I want to remind you, you can listen to this conversation again at 21stshow.org. And while you're there, you can also find our recent past conversations on this issue. We will be having more in the weeks and months ahead, getting a variety of different perspectives on this very divisive issue. More to come here on the 21st Show. Stay with us.